I'm calling this public meeting of the Oregon Board of Forestry to order. First, perform the roll call. Nils Christofferson cannot be here today. Cindy Deacon-Williams cannot be here today. Joe Justice.
Here.
Jim Kelly.
Here.
Brenda McComb.
Here.
Mike Rose.
Here.
And I'm Tom Imeson, so we have a quorum. A couple of announcements. As a reminder, this public meeting will be live streamed all day, so it would be helpful for those who have electronic devices to silence them for the duration of the meeting. Next, we'll have an executive session pursuant to ORS 192-6602H starting at 4:15 p.m. The purpose of the session will be to confer with legal counsel regarding the board's rights and duties related to current litigation or litigation likely to be filed. Representatives of the news media and designated staff shall be allowed to attend the executive session. All other members of the public are not allowed to join. We will adjourn the meeting directly after the executive session is done, so we won't be coming back into this room after that. In order to ensure that the board has the opportunity to conduct all of the business on the agenda for its meetings, public comment per agenda items for agenda topics will be limited to no more than 30 minutes and received upon conclusion of the topic's presentation. A sign-up sheet is available for public comment on a first-come, first-serve basis. While we're on this topic, I want to express my apology. The last board meeting, we did not stick with our agenda as we should have. And as chair, I hold myself accountable for that. So we will do better. I particularly apologize to the dean of the College of Forestry at Oregon State and to people who came here to hear his presentation. So with that, the next item for us is the consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve consent items A through D?
Moved,
seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. And we'll now go to the State Forester for his comments.
Thank you, Tom. I'm going to take a moment to recognize Dennis Richardson, Oregon's 26th Secretary of State, who passed away on Tuesday, February 26. A state funeral will be held today at 2 p.m. at the Oregon State Capitol building in Salem. And prior to the service, Secretary Richardson's body will lie in state in the Capitol Rotunda to allow members of the public to pay their respects. From his service in Vietnam as a combat pilot to his 30-year legal career and 19 years in public service, he found great joy in serving and taking care of others. As Secretary of State, Dennis was fiercely dedicated to accomplishing the work Oregonians elected him to do. He focused on transparency, accountability, and backed that focus with an uncompromising work ethic. I ask you for a moment of silence to honor his service. Thank you. It's been a busy 2 months since January when we last met, including a governor's executive order on fire, the third cultivating change reception in Portland, the start of the legislative session and our budget presentation at that legislature. And I will close out with an update on shared stewardship. On January 30th, Governor Kate Brown signed an executive order creating a council on wildfire response. The council is charged with evaluating the current large fire response system and making recommendations for improvements. Topics to be considered include wildfire funding, response on protected, underprotected, and unprotected lands, wildfire smoke, assistance for communities affected by wildfire, and prevention, treatment, and cost containment of wildfires. The department will be providing support for the council, which has already begun to organize. We're working with the governor's office and the council's chair, Matt Donegan, and the first meeting of the council is scheduled for March 18th at the World Forestry Center. The focus of this meeting will really be on defining the problem for the council. And if you're, most of you are in this room, you know what the problem is. For the council, I think, because it's being comprised of a broad range of Oregon's leaders, they won't have that kind of fundamental background. These leaders will represent healthcare organizations, power companies, insurance, industry, cities, counties, tribes, large and small forest landowners, among others. About 18 to 20 leaders in Oregon will be on the council. The governor's office is planning to release the names of the members this Friday. So the council is essentially leaders of Oregon, and it will be staffed by three committees. And they've been described various ways. The simplest way I heard was before fire, during fire, and after fire. But they're called mitigation, suppression, and community recovery. And this structure creates a really unique opportunity for elevating the focus on our forest and fire protection. And the mitigation committee can provide support and recommendations under the shared stewardship agreement, particularly focused on wildfire-prone regions. The suppression committee can build a support for a sustainable organization in response to the severe fire seasons, the fire program review, Secretary of State audit, and the work on the agency initiative. And the community recovery committee can develop and sort of formalize their approach taken after the Eagle Creek and Chetco Bar fires of 2017, standing up state agencies to help communities recover. I joined in February. Yeah, it is March now, right?
It is
March. I joined other agricultural and forestry leaders in co-hosting the third Portland reception of the Cultivating Change Foundation. Other co-hosts include Alexis Taylor, who's the director of Oregon Department of Agriculture, Dave Dillon, Agricultural Association executive, Christina McNitt, president of Oregon Forest and Industry Council, Scott Reed, vice provost and director of OSU Extension Service, Travis Joseph, president and CEO of American Forest Resource Council, Christopher Elliott, program leader of Outdoor School, and Anthony Davis, interim dean of OSU College of Forestry. The foundation's mission is to value and elevate lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender individuals in the agricultural industry through advocacy, education, and community. The foundation was formed as an extension of a inaugural Cultivating Change Summit in Atlanta. The summit started a long overdue conversation to acknowledge and value the presence of LGBT individuals in the agricultural industry. The summit's now an annual agricultural industry conference that brings together LGBT individuals and their allies from around the country. I was pleased to once again join these leaders to support the foundation's mission. This mission aligns with our values of diversity, equity, and inclusion in all aspects of our business, and our vision to encourage and value employees, provide a safe working environment, and allow employees to reach their full potential in providing public service. It is inspiring to work with other leaders on creating positive change for the LGBTQ individuals who are passionate about agriculture and forest products industry, and ensuring that all individuals have the right to just and fair inclusion in society in which all can participate, prosper, and reach their full potential. So, you always think about meetings, you always think I got to drive to Portland, but this one is just a real inspiring one. So the 2017 state legislature convened on January 22nd, and we've been working with the divisions and programs to track bills, and there's quite a few of them. We have a legislative team assembled in Salem. We're doing bill analysis and preparing executive team members as they engage with legislatures. We have already presented two informational hearings, one on the agency as a whole and one on sudden oak death program. And we're preparing for two more, one on the Forest Practice Act and another on forest ecosystem carbon stocks and flows that should, I think they're coming next week. So it's been, it's just like a new fire season for us. Last week, we presented the department's work and budget to the Ways and Means Natural Resource Subcommittee. We provided the committee a brief overview of Oregon's forest and discussed the board and the Department of Forestry, including some of our key challenges and opportunities. We identified the challenge of increasingly severe and complex fire seasons as the single greatest risk to the agency. Our primary emphasis was we're describing our core programs, and we closed with a summary of the governor's recommended budget. We did this all in 3 hours. It seemed to go well, but then I was giving the presentation, so you may wish to check with others. there was a strong interest in fire protection. We had set up a 27-minute presentation that took over an hour to get through on fire protection. There were quite a few questions. There's actually quite a few new committee members that aren't familiar with forestry, and we are following up and with them and further building understanding of our agency. We also had great turnout for public comment despite the snow. Representative Marsh came and indicated that she's working on a package of support for a sustainable organization based off our initiative. Glenn Casamasa, the regional forester, came and spoke in support of federal forest restoration and highlighted our work on shared stewardship. And there was quite a range of partner organizations from the full spectrum, all supporting the department, which was really nice to see. And I can't thank you all individually, but I'll thank you collectively for those that showed up and provided testimony. Related to our budget, and given the challenging fire season and bad losses in the catastrophic insurance policy business, we had concerns about our wildfire insurance policy. And so both ODF, DAS, and the Emergency Fire Cost Committees sent representatives to meet in person with our underwriters. It seemed prudent to do. We have received a quote for this year's insurance policy. The policy is the same, $25 million of coverage with a $50 million deductible. The total estimated cost is about $3.7 million. The premium itself is $3.65 million, which is a 5% increase over last year's premium, which is pretty good given the market. We have till April 1 to notify Department of Administrative Services to go ahead and purchase the policy. The Emergency Fire Costs Committee met yesterday and unanimously recommended that we proceed with the purchasing of the policy. So we need to initiate a request for $1.865 million or our 50% of the policy deductible. We met yesterday with the Senate co-chairs of the Ways and Means to ensure alignment because we'll have to make this request. We'll have to make the decision prior to having formal approval of the money. And they agreed with the recommendation to purchase the policy. So we're moving forward with that. And I'll close with shared stewardship. As I shared with you at the January meeting, the Secretary of Agriculture recently unveiled a new strategy aimed at getting more work done on our federal forests. The strategy is called Shared Stewardship, and it gives states more of a say in prioritizing and implementing active management. And it has three core elements: determining management needs on a state level, determining the right work in the right places at the right scale, and using all available tools for active management. ODF and the Forest Service have a long history of collaboration, starting with fire protection in state and private forestry and continuing through our federal forest restoration and good neighbor authority work. We feel that shared stewardship is a good way to institutionalize and grow Oregon's collaborative approach to increasing the pace, scale, and quality of forest restoration. We are developing a long-term agreement that defines the principles by which the Forest Service in Oregon will operate. Oregon's principles include an open, transparent, and inclusive process, frequent communication that builds and sustains durable relation among agency partners and stakeholders, and adaptive management, experimenting, learning, and implementing. Oregon is developing themes to guide strategic priorities and investments. Initial thinking on some of the themes includes an initial focus on fire-prone forest and ecosystems of the eastern and south western Oregon, emphasizing restoration of around communities at highest risk of wildfire, especially underserved communities, including rural Oregon, builds on Oregon's collaborative approach by setting statewide priorities at the appropriate scale to empower local collaboratives and communities to develop locally based solutions, identifying strategies and needs on both public and private lands, so continuing our all lands approach, recognizing communities with capacity and or a track record for success and innovation, and incorporates adaptation and mitigation responses to climate change. One key difference in opportunity and shared stewardship is a focus on outcome-based performance measures rather than outputs to demonstrate success or failure. And some of the key outcomes we are focused on include healthy and resilient forest ecosystems, vibrant local communities, and healthy watersheds and functional aquatic habitat. So we'll need to develop appropriate metrics for measuring these outcomes at the right scale and an accountability approach by which we can gauge progress and adjust the approach accordingly. Oregon is poised to fully utilize this strategy in part due to our federal forest restoration program and our network of strong local collaborative groups. And I'll remind the board that our federal forest restoration and our support for collaboratives emerged out of a subgroup that you started many years ago. And it's really great leadership that has put us where we are today. Oregon's federal forest program is unique due to the state's commitment to being a financial partner. And without that support, we could not support our local forest collaboratives who are critical to maintaining the social license and growing the scope of this work. I know that was a lot, but and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Questions or comments from board members? Okay, thank you. Next, we do have some public comment on items that aren't on our agenda today. So, four people, I'll call you all up at once. Ray Monroe, Harry Spurlock, Jason Gonzalez, and Claire Clock.
Chair Imerson, State Forester Doherty, members of the board. I'm Ray Monroe from the Tillamook County Soil and Water Conservation District. We're a special district or political subdivision of the state. I'm here to provide you with information on how the Oregon Forest Practices Act relates to the Tillamook County Soil and Water Conservation District, specifically to the revenues received to do our projects. I'm not quite sure, my board's not quite sure you ever heard about what we all do in this venue. So the Forest Practices Act is a conservation and adaptive plan to provide special districts in our county with money for forest from forest harvest. That money is used to implement projects or inform the public of best managed practices that improve water quality. My voice is cracked. It's because you guys are up hearing me now instead of out in the hall. So what we do, the SWCD sponsors activities that repair, restore, maintain, and enhance the natural environment within Tillamook County. The district has operated under the premise that locally led conservation fosters land and resource stewardship for all users of natural resources in Tillamook County. The focus on resource management issues has evolved to provide information, education, technical and financial assistance to all stakeholders within our county. That's why we don't get a lot of revenues, but the revenues we get are matched out and leveraged 1 to 4 times. It becomes a significant lot of money for a small district. We help with flood control. We help landowners and managers draft and implement conservation plans. We teach young people about natural resources and why they must be protected. We plant trees and other land cover to hold soils in place. We provide information and implement the North Coast Water Quality Management Area Plan, which was the Senate Bill 1010 plan in 1995. I'm sure you guys know all this personally. We join forces with many other partners to enhance the quality of the watersheds and the quality and quantity of water. And we also help with NRCS that provide forest management plans to our local forestry people in Tillamook County. The correlation between the district and the forest plan is you have buffers, we have buffers. You plant trees, we plant trees. You address sedimentation, we address sedimentation. You control soils and runoff, we control soils and runoff. You provide shade for downstream salmonid migration, we provide shade for downstream salmonid migration. You want cool, clean water, and we want cool, clean water. Going about this backwards because I know I only have 3 minutes. So my project summary totals for my fence and riparian planting with our agriculture community in Tillamook from 95 to date is actually we have like 300 miles of livestock exclusionary fencing, once again using these dollars that come in from our forest harvest, and not only that but other grants. I'm personally responsible for planting 917,000 native trees and shrubs. With the other groups in our county, we're at 1.3 million now along our streams and rivers and our riparian areas that actually is protected by our county. 25 miles of off-stream watering, 142 nose pumps, 8 livestock crossings, and over 200 volunteer landowners participating. The additional things I do with that money, which people really don't realize the district does, is my education and outreach started with the Tillamook and Nestucca Connection students, our Oregon Youth Corps, our K-12 in the county, Camp Tillamook, landowners, watershed councils, and various organizations. I started in 2007, joining the fourth grade forester program. The major goal of this program is to revitalize observation of Arbor Day in American schools on the official Arbor Day proclaimed in our state, which is the first week of April. To send every fourth grader home with a tree of their own to plant and care for. To support employment of workers with disabilities. To bring schools, private individuals, businesses, and organizations together to have a direct positive impact on the urban forest and their communities. So each tree that we have is individually packaged for distribution by workers with disabilities, and we pass those out once a year in April, right after we do the Clean Water Festival. Picture of our kids as well. I'm getting quick. Also distributed to the fifth graders in Tillamook County is a book that's published by NRCS called For the Good of the People. They take it home and read it, and they regurgitate it, and they send it back, and we hear it from all. It talks about farmers as stewards of the land. A day in the life of a dairy cow, topsoil and erosion, control and erosion, and how controlling erosion reduces nutrients and pesticides that pollute our waters and resources. We also started our own nursery back in 1996 with the Youth Authority, and we had to help those guys over there and paid them monies out of this to put in their bank account so that when they got out of basically prison, they had monies to go forth. We taught them how to plant trees, harvest trees, and saw water lines the whole nine yards. Also, the job school mare program, when one student can from the schools contact and go to work with me out in the field, and then he has to go back and see what he's learned. He doesn't only have to tell it to his teachers. He has to go in front of the whole school at a lunch hour and present exactly what he learned on what's going on in the agricultural and timber communities in our county. Having said that, I'll finish the bottom line as we need working lands, and the forests and the agriculture community are working lands that can complement each other very respectably. Thank you guys for your time and your service. I appreciate it.
This gentleman next to me has been very busy. Morning. My name is Mary Scurlock, Chair Imeson, State Forester Doherty, members of the board. I'm going to raise this morning two issues that are the subjects of ongoing dialogue with department staff that I thought was time I shared at the board level. And those two issues have to do with debris torrent streams and approvals of alternate practices on steep and erosion-prone slopes and high landslide hazard locations. The first issue I'm going to provide some background on. The importance of wood delivery to fish streams from debris torrents was highlighted by the independent multidisciplinary science team's 1999 report on salmon and forest practices and in the 2000 recommendations of the Forest Practices Advisory Committee. A 2001 amendment to the Forest Practices Act added ORS 527-676 authorization for the state forester to direct the wildlife leaf trees required for clear cuts be left within 50 feet of up to 500 feet of certain type N stream reaches that would deliver to F streams. Debris torrent streams are defined in that legislation generally to include channels and confining slopes that drain watersheds containing high landslide hazard locations that are of sufficient confinement and channel gradient to allow shallow rapid landslide movement. Subsequently, the department finalized an implementing rule in 2007 and developed more specific screening criteria in 2008, which were applied using 10-meter DEM data to develop maps. So far as we know, there has been no scrutiny of these criteria in the interim, nor have the maps been revised using higher resolution LIDAR. Well, last fall, the Oregon Stream Protection Coalition retained Dr. Dan Miller to compare the models developed by Miller and Burnett, 2007, with ODF's debris torrent streams in the Siletz Basin. A summary of this analysis is attached to the testimony I've provided. Our analysis, in summary, found that the ODF-designated reaches comprise only 1.1% of all potential debris torrent stream reaches on private forest lands in the Siletz, and 0% of those that deliver to high intrinsic potential coho reaches. The results indicate to us that the ODF criteria do not identify either enough reaches or the right reaches to make an ecologically significant contribution to wood loading in fish-bearing reaches, which is the ostensible purpose of clumping trees along these streams. What I'd like to share with you is our intention to continue working with the department to develop a monitoring work plan related to debris torrent streams. This would involve consideration of the information we've already provided, as well as available literature and expertise to establish a clearer ecological objective for debris torrent prone non-fish streams. These questions, we'd like to point out, relate directly to at least two high priority effectiveness questions already in the ODF monitoring strategy regarding protection of headwater streams and the effectiveness of leaf tree requirements. It is time, in our estimation, to dedicate monitoring resources to developing recommendations to improve identification and protection of these streams, particularly given that protection of type N streams has been flagged as a deficiency in forest practices rules under the coastal zone management statutes and salmon recovery plans. So we'll keep you posted on ongoing discussions around that issue. As you consider the monitoring information coming to you this spring, it may be that we can link that issue to the Western Oregon Wood Project or similar approach. The second issue I'm going to just very briefly flag, which is the approval of plans for alternate practices to waive existing rule prohibitions that would limit the location of skid trails within 100 feet of stream channels on steep and erosion-prone slopes and the operation of ground-based equipment, tethered ground-based equipment, on high landslide hazard locations. Over the last several months, the coalition has raised concerns with department staff as to whether the department is acting within its authority in routinely approving exceptions to two important rule prescriptions through plans for alternate practices. In our estimation, the applications for alternate practice approval require some further scrutiny to determine whether that we are able to make the findings necessary to support those individual plan approvals, particularly given that we have at this juncture, I'm informed, approved well over 70 exceptions to existing rules. And the reasons for our concerns are both legal and technical. I'm not going to go into them today. I simply wanted to alert the board that we are in dialogue with the department about what the approval standard is, and whether there is a technical basis to demonstrate that the standard is met. It is possible that board oversight would be appropriate on this issue, and we urge you to consider whether it would be of interest to request a demonstration of how these routinely approved alternate plans are protecting waters of the state better than the rule prescriptions, particularly given NOAA and EPA findings that current forest practice rules are inadequate to protect waters of the state from forest operations on headwater streams and landslide-prone areas. It is hard for our coalition to understand how the department can justify relaxing existing rule prescriptions in these sensitive and under-protected areas. But that is exactly what the department is doing. In this context, we recommend intensive monitoring of the numerous already approved operations. Thanks very much.
Good morning, Chair Imeson, State Forester Doherty, and members of the board. Thanks for having us today. Hope everyone survived the ice and snow all right. I guess we've got more coming. It's loads of fun when we're out in the woods. I'm here briefly today, this morning, to talk to you really quickly about the Ferns Notification System, which I've been here in the past bringing up. I'm here on behalf of Oregon Wild, our statewide conservation nonprofit for which I work, where we represent about 20,000 members and supporters. But who I'm really here representing today are the folks who I consider my constituency, who I'm geographically responsible for organizing with, that are focused in areas from about Port Orford to Astoria and coast range, including the folks in my neighborhood where I live, where we're in the heart of industrial forest lands, surrounded by industrial forest land owners, and quite a bit of Oregon Department of Forestry land as well. There's a little bit of BLM land in there. I just wanted to, first of all, thank the board and the state forester and the department for running the Fern system, for creating the Fern system as an accessible place for me and my neighbors to be able to get information about ongoing forest operations, now free of charge as opposed to the way that it used to be, and recognize the development and the success of the steps that we've taken so far with this program. But I want to continue drawing attention to the shortfalls, the shortcomings of the system that users continue to highlight on a regular basis. And in order to do that, I just want to talk quickly about a couple of issues that people continuously tell me they have. For some context here, I actually give workshops all over the coast and coast range for people on how to use the Fern system. ODF staffers have regularly attended our workshops in several of the districts around the state. And ODF itself is only able to provide limited community resources. I do want to recognize how helpful they've been when we do have questions or need information. But so I deal with people in the hundreds, just myself, on helping people use the system, on answering their questions and walking them through it when they have trouble with online systems. And there's a number of things that they've really taken issue with as far as how different notifications are sorted out and the kinds of information we get and whether or not it's actually usable. Those concerns have been submitted to this board in writing on more than one occasion through email from me and others, so I'm not going to go in and elaborate on them and take up too much of your time this morning, but I do want to continue drawing attention to that. And I have a quick example that just yesterday I received a notification. One of the specific things we've asked for is to separate things like countywide roadside spraying out from things like backpack spraying and aerial spraying of herbicides. Even the folks that I work with who aren't concerned about the use of herbicide on the landscape would really like the ability to easily monitor the use of helicopters near their homes that are spraying things when they don't know what's going on. And I recently got a countywide roadside spray. It was called East Lane Spray. It showed up in subscriptions that I have in Florence, Triangle Lake, Walton, and the Eugene area. And the information that I got from that was a small orange dot in far East Lane County and nothing more from that. What I'm actually trying to monitor is helicopter use around my home. And this is exactly the kind of thing that we're asking to make more usable, more approachable. It has nothing to do with use of herbicides on the landscape, but the ability of us to understand what's going on around our homes, because we often can't get that information from the operators. So I'd just like to draw your attention to those written concerns that have arrived to this board and the agency in the past, and ask that we figure out a way to look at this more closely rather than need to take these kinds of concerns to the legislature. Thank you.
Chair Imeson, members of the board, Forester Doherty, Claire Clock from Multnomah County. And this is a preliminary comment. We know that federal, state, and private lands are all mixed to make a forest on a landscape. And we've been hearing recently about cutting on federal lands to increase early successional forest on federal lands. While traveling down from Seattle the other day, I saw the snow-covered hills of the Chehalem Mountains with new clear cuts and young forest. You see it on both sides of the Willamette Valley, and you see it in the Coast Range. The timber industry is pushing for this cutting on the early succession of forest. I would respond to that by saying that the vast majority of private lands is already early successional forest in disproportion to later succession on a total landscape basis. I'm the first to advocate thinning of forest for forest health, for fire protection and and maximum growth when fire isn't an option. I hope by the next meeting that I'll have the numbers to either validate or invalidate my comments that I've just made. Thank you.